Our final case this morning is 2019-1739, the Disciplinary Council versus Marilyn Kramer. For the respondent, Ms. Kramer. If you'll unmute.
Thank you, Your Honors. Thank you, Your Honors. I appreciate it. And please the court, I'm Marilyn Kramer, representing Marilyn Kramer. And I deny all of the allegations against me, and I respectfully submit to the court that there's one question that if anyone wants to determine the case, they can ask this one question as to any of the issues, and it should lead to resolution or determination of what's true and what's not true, what the real facts are. And the question is a very simple question. It consists of one word, and that word is why, W-H-Y. So I respectfully submit that if you ask why concerning certain issues, it can lead you the right way. Now, to get the answer to the why, though, I submit that you have to look at the actual evidence in this case, the actual record, not the unsubstantiated allegations that just have been repeated and repeated for 4 years, saying the same thing over and over. Now, if something is not true, it doesn't matter how many times you say it, it does not become true, and it certainly does not become evidence. As this court well knows, the burden of proof is on the relator to prove, to give you specific facts and show by clear and convincing evidence that there were ethical violations. And he's failed to do that. Even in his reply brief, he's still trying to shift the burden on me to prove the negative. He has taken allegations, assumed them true, allegations made by opponents in litigation against me, and then wants me to prove the negative, which I did. But again, I do not have the burden. Another thing legally that he gives you wrong as a starting point is the standard of review. The standard of review is de novo. So in his reply, when he argues that you have to show deference to findings or statements of the very probate court that I've challenged the rulings on or previous courts, the Supreme Court does not have to do that. The law is plentiful on that. For example, in terms of the burden of proof, Ohio State Bar Association versus Reed, there's actually a number of cases, Disciplinary Council versus Jackson. And in terms of the de novo standard of review, as I'm sure this court is aware, from Plaintiff Harper, Bar Association versus Heisler, Disciplinary Council versus Simon, and that is really the starting point. Now, in terms of what are we talking about, evidence to look at, I respectfully submit this record has been cluttered by relator just dumping the entire probate cases on the panel and on the court to go through it and sort it out. Some of it, even the lower court admitted was not actual evidence, was not evidence, but you've got all kinds of scurrilous, irrelevant things. You have four brown boxes. I mean, when I went to look at the record in Columbus before this pandemic, there were four boxes with repetition and monstrous. I respectfully submit, if you go to sort of almost hidden at the very end of the boxes, at the very end, there's white binders with tabs and table of contents. And that has everything that's relevant. You actually only need 33 exhibits of all the exhibits. You only need 33 to you actually need less than that, but that'd be the most you need to decide this. But those binders at least are where you can find a specific pleading that you want to find. Otherwise, it's totally impossible because, as happened in the hearing, relator's exhibits had no table of contents, no tabs, an entire case file he called Exhibit 1. So you couldn't find a particular pleading. Now, it's also untrue that I did not provide a post-hearing summary. I guess I should have called it that. But also to assist the court, at the front of all the binders is the document labeled Respondents, Exhibits, and Table of Contents. It is a table of contents, but it is not an ordinary table of contents. It has detail. It is my summation. It has argument exhibit by exhibit. So if you look at the one that I submitted,
counsel,
that's in the front
counsel,
of the
counsel, can I interrupt you for a minute?
Instead of going over all of the
paperwork in these four boxes. Do you deny that the statements that you that have been identified at the core of the problem here, or the basis, I would say, for some of the disciplinary proceedings, do you deny that you said those?
I deny I said some of the things, and I deny that things were taken out of context or distorted. Text without context is pretext. Now, I did not say those. You can comb through all the hearings in the probate court. You will not find any instance where I was disrespectful or critical of the judges in any hearings. Now, when I was deposed twice and asked specific questions in confidential depositions and asked things, what I did was I reported violations. Let's go back to this asking why. All right, who is Marilyn Kramer? Look at Exhibit A, that's my biography, excerpts of my biography, my professional background. In 42 and a half years, no client has ever filed a grievance or complaint against me. And similarly, and more significantly, I have never filed a grievance against a judge or another lawyer before or since. So you say, why did Marilyn Kramer in this case file an affidavit of disqualification and a grievance against the probate judge? That's not the way to have a judge be favorable to you on your case. So you have to say, well, why did she do that? Now, again, what I'm saying is you have to go to the actual evidence to see why. So the why is...
Counsel, the affidavit of disqualification was dealt with. That's not a factor here.
I understand that, but I'm saying the facts that are recited in it and the jurisdictional memo, I'm not trying to relitigate that. I'm saying that the things that are in my exhibit, like I said, I want you to look at the actual evidence in III, and in exhibit C, if you wanted longer recitation. The reason I filed a grievance in this case was because the probate judge was violating not only the canons of ethics, but also Ohio statutes. And under rule 8.3, I'm here not because I did something unethical. I'm here because I was ethical and did my duty, it's the right and duty of a lawyer under 8.3 to report ethical violations.
Counsel, let's get past the AOD because that was found not to be with merit.
There's no question that the judge violated Ohio code. There's a statute that says 2113.06 that says who you appoint as an administrator. He violated that. If it's not Marilyn Kramer, an heir and attorney and resident of Ohio, there's a secondary priority for appointment, the Ohio Assistant Attorney General for Medicaid Recovery. He did not appoint that person. So who did he appoint? The treasurer of his campaign committee. That's unethical. A judge has to avoid the appearance of impropriety.
Wouldn't that then, if you thought that that was unethical or a violation of someone to the person's relationship from his campaign, would there have been a report filed about that?
That's what I'm saying. First off, they concealed the relationship for almost a year. But when we learned, I raised it. Then there was the charade of we're transferring this to Judge Spicer, who immediately referred everything to the magistrate for Judge Montgomery and continued the same course of favoritism. I did. That's my whole point. That's why I'm here, because I filed a grievance. What did the board? Because you got to say, well, all right, now we know why Marilyn filed a grievance, because she said there's these violations. It's her right and duty. An interesting thing with the rule. What is the last sentence? Other than saying it should be encouraged, it says the lawyer should be protected. Why would they write that even in the rule? Because there's retaliation often. Now, the board refused to even look at it, refused to even consider the grievance, and said that it's an ongoing case. Then what happens when the treasurer, Thomas Tanef, that was appointed by the judge, when he files a grievance on me, they look at that. And I said, well, that's the ongoing case and the same ongoing case. So why are they looking at the grievance against me? And why, if these violations were allegedly so egregious that they would recommend an indefinite suspension of law, when there's nothing against me for 42 and a half years, if it's that egregious, why did it take 4 years to investigate? Why wouldn't they have known right away? And why even now is there still no actual evidence, just repeating the allegations over and over? And these allegations have changed 10 times in the 4 years, 10 times. There was no real investigation conducted. He just accepted the allegations. Now, I asked my, Carrie Chaplin is the other heir. She and I are the two heirs of the ancillary estate. I asked her, what do you want me to have these judges know? What's most important to you? What do you want me to say? She's not a lawyer. And she said, I want you to say that we've been robbed. And that's the point. The heirs got zero, Medicaid recovery got zero, and this Thomas Taniff got 200% of the estate. He got 100% of their, what was there, then an insurance claim. He took everything. Nothing in Ohio law. They give you 1% on real estate.
Was there some action filed against Mr. Taniff?
At this point in time, no. Is the probate case is pending. These matters are going on, bringing this certainly, I don't want to say the kind of things because that's going far afield of what the issues are here. The issues are specific things that I'm accused of that there is no evidence of, and in fact, the evidence refutes it. The we have to say like the commercial, where's the beef? Where's the proof? Where's the actual proof? Not just allegations, where's the proof? So looking at different things that, as I say, the allegations kept changing over time, 10 times. I responded to numerous letters of inquiry. They kept changing. And finally, even after the complaint was filed with the board, Mr. Sheets told me there was another grievance and made me answer another letter of inquiry and deposed me. And it turned out there was no third grievance, new grievance. He said, well, he made a mistake with the form letter. There was no grievance, just to depose me and depose me on an open case, not related to this at all, a case that was that's criminal and had federal proceedings related with it, very complex case that went on for 11 years. So he's calling clerk's offices, a disciplinary counsel, and these are ongoing cases pressuring that client. And even another case, it's a fishing expedition. The reason the allegations became a moving target was every time I showed him and gave him evidence that disproved it, then he'd have to shift to something else instead of close it as he should have. Not only was there no investigation.
Counsel, let me direct your attention to what is being requested by the board. The indefinite suspension is one of them. And then interaction with OLAC, which is, are you familiar with OLAP, Ohio Lawyers Assistance Program?
I know what it is. I keep hearing a voice saying unmuted, and I don't know who that pertains to. Or...
Okay. You're aware of what they're asking for?
Yes, Your Honor. And that's another thing, too, with these ever-changing allegations. They've added things, even at this stage. They added when I go to a panel hearing, suddenly my disabilities become an issue. Research is really a non-issue. Then now they add OLAP, they add mental health evaluations. If you read the Ohio Revised Code definition of mental health, what a mental health disorder is, sleep disorders do not trigger that at all. That's people that can't even function day to day. This is all additional actions to defame me. The whole point of this grievance is to discredit me, to silence me. This is the serious thing. This is why it goes beyond Marilyn Kramer. This isn't just about me. This is a chilling effect on attorneys. It discourages. It's additional retaliation. So we want to act like she's got these issues that were never raised, and there's no basis to raise them, but you throw them in now just to defame me on the things that are a public record.
Well, Counselor, is it true or is it not true that you represented at some point that you were executor to the property here in Ohio when you had not yet been appointed?
No, that is not true. That is not true. At the very first hearing, at that time, everybody agreed, well, it's Ohio Revised Code basically required it, but the two siblings that opposed it agreed that I would be appointed. There was, and the magistrate said she would appoint me. And then the had to post a bond, and I had to obtain the what they call foreign records from Alabama.
But did you act in that capacity at all before you were appointed and before you were actually appointed?
November 28th? No, because I needed the letters of authority, and those came with my at the same time as my application. So and it was in that was, I believe, November 28th, 2015 and no, 2014, November 28th, I was appointed. And then I started working on the property in January. So when I had arrearages to pay on utilities, I had taxes to pay. I don't know why he's saying selfish motive. This has cost me a lot in addition to losing to getting zero on the inheritance. I mean, just the bond posting for me, because I used a Cleveland company where I'm from, was extra expensive. So there was just a lot of expenses with it.
All right, counsel, you've used your time.
Oh, my goodness. Did I forget to say I wanted to reserve anything for rebuttal? I guess I did.
You've used your time, ma'am. Mr. Sheets.
Justice, may it please the court. My name is Don Sheets, and I'm here on behalf of the later the office of Prisoner. Today, I'm asking you to overrule respondents' objections and instead adopt the board's recommended findings of fact, conclusions of law, and impose its recommended sanction and indefinitely suspend respondent from the practice of law with her reinstatement subject to conditions. Why an indefinite suspension is necessary in this case is really summed up by respondent's first statement during this argument, in that she denies all of the allegations to this day. The first violative filing in the underlying case before the probate court occurred in the summer of 2015, after a respondent was removed as ancillary administrator. She lashed out against Magistrate Green, who removed her without any reasonable factual basis, impugned her integrity. Then went on to impugn Judge Montgomery's integrity, Judge Spicer's integrity. At every stage of the process, when she lost on some issue, she would impugn the integrity of a judicial officer and the court itself. And that was 5 years ago, almost 5 years ago. And in the time since then, she's shown no insight into her own behavior, no ability to acknowledge any wrongfulness in her own conduct, and continues to deny it to this day. And in fact, in her brief, states that she was brave and exemplary in the way that she conducted herself. The fact of the matter is, she made repeated and pervasive statements impugning the integrity of those judicial officers. She has no reasonable factual basis for those statements. Her defense is essentially twofold, near as I can tell, and it's that I have the burden, which is correct, and she can strategically rely on that. However, her other defense is that her statements are clearly supported by the underlying record in the probate case, and that's why the record's been submitted as an exhibit. It's because of her own conduct. However, that's why it's not an exhibit, because she says it supports her statements, and it doesn't. Every jurist who has looked at this matter has not agreed with her based on the same record. You have the same record. You will have an opportunity to look at it. The board had an opportunity to look at it. And no one has agreed to her with her at this point. And she has shown no ability or insight or ability to question her own conduct or show insight or acknowledge wrongfulness. So that's really at the heart of why an indefinite suspension is necessary in this case. The fact that she complains about the record and how large it is, much of that is due to her own filings. She created much of the record. So to the extent that it's huge, it's because she would continually argue moot issues, would continually impugn the integrity of the judicial officers. Justice Stewart, I believe you asked about her misrepresenting her authority as the administrator. She did do that. As you heard her acknowledge during her argument just now, she wasn't appointed until November 28, 2014. Well, the record has emails that she sent to a realtor in October of 2014, approximately a month before she was actually appointed. And in those emails, she berated the realtor for having the house on the market. She respondent represented herself as the ancillary administrator, despite not having been appointed yet. And the board properly found that she misrepresented her authority in that respect.
Counselor, what about Ms. Kramer's allegation about the inappropriateness of who the judge appointed as administrator? based on campaign affiliation or whatever.
He may have worked on her on his campaign, excuse me, Judge Montgomery's campaign. However, what Ms. Kramer's upset about is being removed as ancillary administrator. She's just searching for whatever allegation she can to try to attack that finding that he made. Now,
but I mean, is that, based on your experience, is that appropriate, inappropriate, determined on a case-by-case basis?
It's a case-by-case basis. It's not blanket prohibited. And really, if you look back, even at her first filing to become the ancillary administrator, it's clear to anyone with any experience that this case was going to be a problem. It was a familial fight.
Can you say again that this case was going to be what?
It was going to be difficult.
Okay.
Difficult because of the familial conflict that was going on, difficult because of the filings that Ms. Kramer made, even just from the beginning, it was clear that this was going to be a difficult matter. So to assign it to someone, it wasn't some kind of gift. When you look back, the problems in this case, although probably no one anticipated how severe they would be, it was clear it was going to be difficult. So this wasn't some kind of great appointment that the judge was handing out. The fact of the matter is he wasn't rewarding anyone for anything. He likely knew, it was clear at that point, that it was going to be a difficult case, and it was a difficult case. Ms. Kramer complains that about Mr. Taniff's attorney's fees, but she is the one that generated all the work. It was through her own action that Mr. Taniff had to expend so much time and energy responding to her, dealing with her actions. That's why the hours ran up so much. All the sell in the end was a $30,000 house. I'm sorry.
Was it relevant about the difficulty or the lack thereof of the case as to who the judge appoints as administrator?
Well, to the extent of whether it's viewed as some kind of reward for someone who worked on the campaign, yes.
Well, assuming not as necessarily as an award, just as an appointment that the judge is authorized to make to Mr. Taniff or any other lawyer who would be competent to be administrator under these circumstances.
Sure. Well, let's assume it did raise a question. The proper way to handle it is to file an affidavit of disqualification. The proper way to handle it is to file a grievance. It's not proper to conduct yourself in the way that Ms. Kramer has for the last 5 years.
And what about the ex parte allegations? One that there was ex parte communications about the case, and two, that they were actually billed for.
Totally unsupported. So yes, she's making the allegations, but she's provided no evidence to support them. So this is similar. This is where part of why Pullens and Frost are important cases to refer to. Ex parte allegations were made in those cases, and I believe it was Pullens, and I quoted from Pullens in my brief, but that Pullens stated without any corroboration that he saw the prosecutor and the judge talking, but that he didn't know what was said. But he went on to make allegations similar to the ones that Ms. Kramer is making, in the same manner, conducting himself inappropriately. And this court expressly stated that that wasn't a sufficient basis for the types of allegations that she was making. She cited billing statements from Attorney Taniff, but a couple points in that respect. It involved him calling the court. There were things like calling the court, and he testified. Ms. Kramer had an opportunity to cross-examine him. And he testified about those things. He flatly denied any ex parte communication. He said if he was calling the court, it was to obtain filings that weren't available online, those sorts of things, or he was calling the clerk's office. And she had an opportunity to cross-examine and develop a record and to try to offer evidence of ex parte communications, but she didn't. He denied it, and she declined to make any allegations or support them in any further way. And it's because she didn't have any evidence, and she's proffered no evidence. So yes, she's made the allegations, but they're wholly unsupported by any factual basis, let alone the reasonable factual basis required under Gardner.
Thank you.
Regarding, I think she made a statement that the allegations in this case have changed 10 times. There's been one formal complaint in this matter, and only one. It was not amended. I cited footnotes in the complaint, or there are footnotes attached to each violation showing the paragraph that they refer to. Those allegations have not changed since day one. She had plenty of notice of what she was accused of, and they have not changed at all. There was no amended complaint in this matter. Regarding her mental health issues, based upon her conduct at the hearing, she was late both days substantially, did not make any form of competent presentation, provided no serious defense, had no exhibits prepared, virtually no exhibits prepared. And what she did bring, she had single copies that weren't marked. Based on her performance at the hearing, as well as the pervasive and really destructive conduct that she engaged in, it appears that there may be an unaddressed mental health issue. So we bring that up in sanction. I think the board got it right. That recommendation is important. I urge the court to adopt that recommendation in order to protect the public. If she's going to continue practicing, she needs to demonstrate that she can engage in a competent practice, an ethical practice of law. And finally, the aggravating factors in this case overwhelm the mitigation.
Yes. Let me address the mental health issue. Was that requested during the proceedings at any time? Was that ever broached with Ms. Kramer, that she get a mental health evaluation from OLAP or any other appropriate mental health provider?
Yes, Your Honor. On the morning of the second day, I made a motion under GOBAR Rule 5, Section 15C to have her evaluated. The board deliberated. They denied my motion at that time. And frankly, I hesitated to make it, although I think she suffers from something. I did not want to delay the case any further. I think that there's the misconduct in this case is severe, and I think there's value in bringing this case to a close. And so part of me certainly considered just handling it through sanction, but it appeared serious enough. I felt like I needed to make that motion on that morning. And while it was denied, I understand, you know, I wasn't privy to the board's deliberation or the panel's deliberation. But I presume they didn't want to delay the matter any further, and I think that was a reasonable way to handle it. It can be handled through sanction. We've requested that, and I think there's value in just bringing this matter to a close. But what really stands out in this case when you look at the board report is that two of the aggravating factors required 10 pages of the board report to lay out the factual basis underlying them. It's the dishonesty she engaged in before the probate court, the false affidavit she's provided, the false testimony, and her lack of cooperation throughout the entire disciplinary process, arriving late for virtually every hearing. The board spent 10 pages describing that conduct. It was that severe, that pervasive, and that destructive. And the only mitigating factor in this is lack of prior discipline. So with all those with all those aggravating factors in mind, it makes clear that respondent's not going to be deterred. As I stated at the outset, it's been 5 years, and she continues to wholesale deny all the allegations. She's not going to be deterred from engaging in this conduct. And in fact, in looking at her objections, she's now turned this conduct on the Board of Professional Conduct, impugning the integrity of the volunteer panel members, as well as the overall board. This conduct's unacceptable. I ask that the court adopt the board's recommended findings of fact, conclusions of law, and impose its recommended sanction, and indefinitely suspend respondent from the practice of law, with her reinstatement subject to conditions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Kramer, you've used your time. You may take a minute. You'll have to turn your microphone on.
Sorry, thank you. The organizer did that favor for me and I forgot that it was off. Thank you very much. First, there was never any issue regarding mental health raised at any time before the recommendation before this court. The only health issues that came up were my sleep disorders. I offered to give all of my Cleveland Clinic medical records. They declined. They didn't want them. That has nothing to do with mental health. This is brand new in this recommendation. Second, it is not true that I gave no evidence or proof. I've cited the pages and transcripts before the probate court and the panel as to my more than one grounds for saying there were ex parte meetings. When the notation says contact the court to discuss Marilyn Kramer's answer, and right after that he files a motion to strike it. When there's a notation that says contact the court to discuss what's our next step, when Lloyd Cohen is more than one attorney, when Lloyd Cohen, previous attorney, met with the magistrate, 2 days later she moved to remove me. Now, if I had this obsession that he thinks to keep as administrator or to delay things, I would have filed an appeal when I was removed. I did not file an appeal because I just wanted to get this thing moving forward, and I had no idea he would appoint his treasurer. My cooperation, it was incredible. Deposed twice, multiple letters of inquiry, hundreds of documents. The allegations did keep changing. He ultimately did not amend the complaint, but he still added allegations at the hearing, and he adds them in this recommendation. There was one grievance filed, I refuted it. Now, to show that he didn't investigate, I don't think he even read, and I know this is a strong accusation, but he didn't even read what I gave him, because he has moved to strike and persuaded the panel to strike three affidavits, which are mitigation, even if you want to think I did something. He moved to strike them, and the grounds he moved to strike these lawyers' affidavits, MMM567, he moved to strike them saying they're old, they're from 2016. I gave them to him in 2016 in connection with this grievance.
Counsel, you abused your time here.
Thank you. I just say that the one thing that he said that is true is I have no remorse for following the code. And if you don't want lawyers and judges following the code, then repeal that section. I go with Joshua 24:5. As for me and my family, we will serve the Lord. We all have to meet a just judge. And God knows, and I know, I'm not the one that ever lied. And if you read the testimony of Bob Dunn.
Thank you, ma'am.
He's adamant in his transcript. I did not give a false transcript. But thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, we'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. That concludes our morning session. Marshall, will you adjourn court?
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.